That can mean only one thing. The Navy has just pulled in to dock at the Rocontra with Anna DeVlantis.
Thank God you're here.
That is true. That is really true. Rear Admiral Benelli is with us. He is one of the, well, let's just put it this way. This is a decorated man I've got sitting in front of me, Gary Benelli. Mm-hmm. He is a retired admiral, United States Navy, a Navy SEAL. We were just talking right before you came on. You were in the first underwater demolition team, Navy SEAL.
My Navy career started in Chicago back in 1968. I was in the first underwater demolition SEAL boot camp company here at Great Lakes.
Wow.
How cool is that?
Wow. Now, and that there's a proud tradition of the UDT, of the frogmen, as right. they were known, right, going right. back to World War II. But then it became the SEAL program was really a Vietnam era.
Right. President Kennedy started SEAL Team 1 on the West Coast, SEAL Team 2 on the East Coast in 1962.
And the idea of that was
counterinsurgency to stop communism in Southeast Asia. And they got very quickly drawn into the Vietnam War.
Special Forces. People think about Navy SEALs, and they think about those. They think about movies that depict it, or you know, maybe a Rambo movie or something like that, and guys doing all kinds of crazy things. And that is obviously part of what it is. You have to sneak. You have to get in and get out before anybody knows you were there. In theory, right?
I break it down to three things. Most people think of the SEALs as door kickers, putting bullets on targets. That's important, but there's three things. They're warriors. They're diplomats and they're problem solvers. They're in a lot of parts of the world that are hot spots in the world where they're trying to keep them from getting out of hand. So they use their diplomatic as well as their problem solving skills. It's not as sexy as the warrior side, but it's very important to the national security of the nation.
And there's a unilateral piece to doing what you do, too, because oftentimes you folks are dropped into a situation, and the problem-solving thing is a fascinating one, because that's where you have to make some decisions on your own. You're just told, here's what you're supposed to do. This is what your assignment is. Get it done, essentially, right?
Correct. We might be tasked with going somewhere in the world and grabbing someone, turning them over to the local authorities, and seeing that they're adjudicated through their judicial system.
Right. And they're all over the world now. There's These special warfare personnel are attached to things all over the world that we're not even thinking about, basically in almost every continent in the world, right?
Absolutely right. Today, as we sit here, we have United States Navy SEALs in more than 30 different countries. I'd like to say some of the places we're there because the local people in that area want us there, mm-hmm. or there's places that we want to be there, the president wants us there, and we're there. There are other places we're there, and no one knows we're there.
Right.
But fourth, there's other places that people think we're there that we've never been there.
Don't tell us which those are. I want people thinking that you're everywhere.
That's on a need-to-know basis, I'm sure, and we don't need to know. There is a story that's out. A lot of people are weighing in about a Medal of Honor push for a SEAL Team 6 officer, I believe, who was left behind in Afghanistan. They thought he was dead. It turned out he fought to the brutal end. And some video has emerged that has sort of pieced together what happened in his final hours.
Right. There was a mountaintop in Afghanistan early in the war. A senior chief, Brett Slablinsky, was leading a group of special operators on that mountaintop. They took immediate fire. The enemy gets a vote every day. One of the gentlemen that was with Britt was an airman from the Air Force Special Operations. Mm-hmm. He was shot a number of times. Britt checked to see if he was alive. At that time, Britt did not think he was alive.
Right.
They had to extract. They were taking a lot of fire. They extracted. Now, I read in the New York Times yesterday that they think that he might have survived a little bit longer.
Right.
And the Secretary of the Air Force is trying to get his medal upgraded to a Medal of Honor.
Yeah. There's a story in that New York Times piece. They talk about how he may have revived himself enough to actually start to create cover for the people coming in to cover SEAL Team 6 as they were extracting back, as they were moving backward away from the thing, which is it's just an amazing story. I mean, they're
amazing people. Mm-hmm. They're
special
they're
war.
Amazing
well, that's what
people.
It speaks to, I think, when you read about what happened there or what we know.
Right. And there's so much talk about Navy SEALs because it's, you know, there have been movies and it's a storied institution now. The reality shows of what the boot camp is like. I've been on the beach at Coronado in North Island and watched the guys come up out of the water and it's almost it's surreal
it
the amount of dedication these guys have to have to do what they do. But there's an entire family of special warriors, and I think that needs to be pointed out too. Not only Navy SEALs, but you've got Marine Recon, you've got Air Force Special Forces, all the rest of them, you know, up and down the line, who, as you're pointing out, take part in that, because these packages have to be created mission specific.
Correct. We task organize, so most operations require all the services involved, and naturally our partners and our allies, and that's the way we fight. We fight in a joint world today.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of training to do that. The average SEAL today, it takes 2.5 years before we can deploy a SEAL overseas.
2.5 years of training.
2.5 years of training before they can make their initial deployment.
And it's funny, I've had the honor of getting to know a few of these guys over the years, mm-hmm. and it is the physical nature of it is fascinating to me.
Unbelievable.
They're, to me, and Admiral, please don't hit me when I say this, but you remind me of ants, because I've never seen any human being at the size. You have to be relatively, I mean, these guys are not like gigantic bodybuilder types, and sometimes you see, you know, army guys are like ginormous guys. Mm-hmm. They're thin, they're wiry, they're
compact.
They're compact. They're tactical size in a lot of respects, because they have to be, and they can lift like an ant can lift like 1,600 times its weight. That's basically what I've said. These Navy SEALs, I'm like, how is this guy doing what I think he's doing?
Right, and remember, it's all about mind, body, and soul. We're going after the same people that the Fortune 500 companies are going after. So for every SEAL who can start training, only 1 in 5 get the privilege of starting training. Then we put them into a 2.5 year training and selection pipeline, and we're lucky if we get a 25% return on investment. Only the federal government could get that, could afford to do that.
Well, right.
How has the training changed over time?
And that's a good question, Anna. The basic part of training probably hasn't changed that much since World War II, that initial 6 months of what we call BUDS, Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training. But that's the first 6 months. You've got another 2 years, and that changes all the time. It changes mostly depending on what the enemy is doing or what we think the enemy will do.
Right.
So it's always in a very dynamic situation.
Mm-hmm. And the president has, and this is an interesting point here too. I mean, obviously, this is the Pentagon, but the president basically, if a mission is going to be undertaken by SEAL Team 6 or whomever, basically it's gotten to the president's desk, right? And he has said yes or no on almost all of that.
It's gotten up to high authorities.
Right, exactly.
So it's need-to-know basis.
Right, and so they know if something has to be done. I mean, that's why the Bin Laden, and I want to talk a little bit about that, because the Bin Laden piece is it's a fascinating one, because mm-hmm. you have, there had to be a decision there where they never had eyes on the target at that point. So they didn't know for sure that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
At least within the degree of certainty that I think almost everybody felt more comfortable with. But that's what you guys do and did every day.
That's true. That particular operation, although it was across the border, although it was against a high-profile target, it was something that
in an allied country, theoretically.
An allied country, but it's something that our guys were doing every single night in Afghanistan.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and then the great... And it's been, for all of the successes, too, that have been spoken of, storied, and those that are not, there have been a number of tragedies. The SEAL Team 6, not all the same members, but I think a few of them were lost in a shootdown, right?
There's more than one SEAL team. And so it's,
right.
And we have SEALs that are dedicated to counter terrorists. We also have SEALs counter-terrorism. It's a little bit of a difference, but they cross-function. They can do either. Since 9/11, we've lost 150 men in naval special warfare, either in the fight or training to get in the fight.
Wow.
Wow.
In a small unit.
So speaking of that, mm-hmm. on September 14th at the Chicago Hilton, there is an event that is for the Navy SEAL Foundation. And if people just want to make a donation to the Navy SEAL Foundation, we'll explain how you can do that in a second. But let's talk about this event, because you're raising money for this foundation, which you are now the executive director of. And
actually, I'm the chairman. We have a smart woman who's the CEO.
behind every great man.
Yeah.
You know what they say.
That is true. So you, this money that you guys raise for the foundation goes to where?
It goes to the guys and their families. We're very proud of, for every dollar we raise, 95 cents goes directly to the guys or their families.
And what? For what purposes?
It provides a variety of things. I'll give you a good human interest story. Camps for kids. Of course, the guys are gone 270 days. It's not great on family life. Mm. I'm sitting around a campfire up in the local mountains for the kids, a kids' camp that the foundation supports, and a young man across the way, he must have been 11, 12 years old, gets up and said, "Hey, my dad's a Navy SEAL, and my dad sucks." Mm. And the little girl sitting next to me is probably 10 years old, cute as can be, the light bulb goes on her head, and she stands up and says, "Yeah, my dad's a Navy SEAL too, and he does suck," because the kids are gone. So they have the camps bring them together. We pay for psychologists and psychiatrists to be there to get them through that they're not in this alone. Because to make a resilient warrior, I need to make a resilient warrior family.
And let's talk a little bit about the rotation home for these guys. There have been movies now, and there's narratives written about this, because in this modern warfare, I don't think it's any different than it was in World War II, but it's certainly the story's being told differently now. Guys sometimes have the dust of the battlefield on them when they're returning home to their families in some cases. Now, I know that the Marines, and I believe Navy SEALs also, are very careful to bring guys back and bring them back stateside and start kind of working on readjusting them before they go back to their homes to try to deal with many of the things that they've seen.
That's good, Ro. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we found, we've been in war now for 15 years, okay? So we're trying to make sure when men come home, they're ready to come home. Mm-hmm. So before they come home, once we take them out of the battle space, we have something called third location decompression. We take them with their buddies who they've been in the fight with, and they go to some off-site. They spend some time together. They spend time with the chaplains, with the psychiatrists. And I took a lot of flack at first from the wives and some of the folks saying, "Why are you holding my husband up from coming home?" Now we've done it. We've repeated time and time again. The wives will tell us that they're getting a better man through the door now because they've gone through this.
Are other branches of the military doing this or in other?
To some degrees, I can't speak on authority who's doing mm-hmm. what where, mm-hmm. but something we've adopted, and I think other folks are doing that too.
It's working.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a real need for it. I mean, that's one of the things, one of the work that we do with the USO is we deal with some of this. And it's interesting that the Navy SEALs, the people who are in the spend a lot of time in the high pressure situations. I don't know what other there's military terminology for it that tries to take the emotion out of it. But the reality is, the guys who are really in the stuff are the ones who need that need that special attention. And these special warfare.
We have guys. Just think of it. In today's society, we can do it. We have guys that are taking bullets off their Kevlar vests with the enemy, and 24 hours later, they can be walking through the front door to their.
Correct.
Families. Probably not the best situation to put them in.
No, and with all due respect to all the branches here, I know the Army was fairly late to adapt to this because mm-hmm. it's such a big instrument. There's so many members of the Army who are involved in this, and they just didn't have the resources and the ability to do it. Whereas the Special Warfare Community and the Marines had smaller groups of people that they were able to take care of, and so this is something that this post-warfare idea of getting guys transitioned back in, because it's almost impossible. I mean, you saw it in the Hurt Locker, right?
Absolutely.
The guys, mm-hmm. he's literally wearing that suit,
right?
And then mm-hmm. the next day he's walking around his Kroger, right? Trying to figure out where the frozen food is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's a difficult thing. And that's part of the work that you guys do here, right?
Guys who have made 12, 14, 16 deployments, combat deployments, it's very difficult. The other thing we're concerned about, we want these folks to be value-added citizens once they retire. So we have a specialized transition program on the West Coast as well as the East Coast where the SEALs are home-based to help them transition into the civilian world.
It's amazing.
All right. Well, okay. So now let's do this thing. If people want to go, because I just want to make sure that they understand how to do this, want to go to this event, and it's how much are the tickets? Do we know how much the tickets are?
I have no idea.
You know what? They're worth it. Whatever they are, they are worth the price of admission.
And I have to admit, Chicago. I'm told by my staff that the folks in Chicago have turned out in mass. So I think we're going to have a sold out event.
So NavySealFoundation.org is a place to go make a to learn about the organization and make a donation. If you would like to attend this event at the Hilton on September 14th, hosted by our own Sylvia Perez, you can email Lisa at lwcoinc.com, and I will we'll put that up on our website as well, a link to that. If you'd like to take part in that, that is a it's a night for some people who really deserve not only the recognition but the support and their family members specifically.
Absolutely, and we have General Martin Dempsey, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is going to give the keynote.
What does he know?
He's a soldier. Yeah. He knows.
That's what I always like to say to any chief. What do you know? What do you know? All right. Well, and that's why my military career was stillborn, and yours, sir, ended as a rear admiral. So, Gary Benelli, thank you very much, and thank you for your service, sir.
Thanks, Ro. Thanks, Anna, for having us on. Mm-hmm.